Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Presented by Kangaroo Express.
Hey, it's the Root.
Jaguars Monday with J.P. Shadrick, Jaguars great Tony Baselli, and CBSSports.com senior writer Pete Prisco is sponsored by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday starts right now.
Yes, it does. This is Jaguars Monday from the HananiahAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. J.P. Shadrick, CBSSports.com senior NFL columnist Pete Prisco, and Jeff Lagerman sitting in a little early tonight, getting ready for All Access tonight at 7 o'clock on Channel 4.
Got Marquise Lee tonight.
Going to
look at J.J. Watt and a little pass protection on the film room.
Mm-hmm.
Be a good show.
Love it.
I
like that. Love it.
I like that.
Half the man usually in that chair right there.
Yeah, I know. This is this is an upgrade.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Well, I hope so.
Quiet.
I'm better dressed.
You're better dressed. You'll be quiet. You'll be nicer to the callers.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to do ourselves in here.
Baselli berates callers on this show.
Oh, I know.
Flat out.
Trust me. When I walk through the hallway on the way to do television, I can hear Tony yelling.
Yeah. Well, you can probably hear him yelling when you get to this.
Oh, yeah.
Down there to do television.
You don't even have to be in this hallway. You can be in the hallway down the road and hear him.
We'll have Tony from New York City, where he is getting ready for the National Football Foundation annual banquet. He'll be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. That's the official induction ceremony.
Today?
I think it's tomorrow night.
Officially, good.
Yes.
So he's an official Hall of Famer after tomorrow.
Good for him.
And Ego's going to be even more out of control then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I never really watched him in college. I mean, I never have and really don't watch a lot of college football. I just know what type of a player he was at the pro level. And there was that. I mean, during that era, there were some great left tackles. I mean, Walter Jones, John Ogden, Tony Baselli, and then I got to see a Hall of Fame caliber left tackle in Anthony Munoz, who I got my first start ever at defensive end against. And, I mean, so I've got a couple good ones to gauge what a good left tackle is. And trust me, I faced the best left tackle in football in practice for 4 years. Bar none. The best.
Who's that?
Baselli.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that was amazing.
Oh, here. Oh, I thought you were talking about.
What do you think I meant? Jeff Criswell?
I don't know. Maybe. I agree with you. To me, he's the best. Anthony Munoz, to me, is the best I've ever seen with my own two eyes. Tony's right there with him.
The only thing Tony doesn't have, which offensive lineman, it seems to be almost a prerequisite to go into the NFL Hall of Fame, is longevity.
Correct.
But if you looked at his 4 or 5 years and the level of play that he played at for 4 or 5 years, and compared that to other Hall of Famers, their best 4 or 5 years, Tony's would be right there at the top.
I've done a lot of the research. Tony's sack percentage significantly better than the other guys, including Walter Jones, who was very, very good and deserving of the honor. Willie Rofe gave up 5 sacks in one game to Chuck Smith. 5 in 1 game. He's in the Hall of Fame. Tony Baselli went games without ever giving up. I don't think he ever gave up 5 sacks in a season, to be honest with you.
No, it was hard actually practicing against him because, you know, in practice you try to gain confidence in the game plan, confidence in, you know, throughout the course of the week, you know. So I used to have to go over and work against the backups just to gain a little confidence because, you know, you had all these moves and you try to work them in practice and then you try them on Tony anticipating, okay, this is the move that I'm going to use against so-and-so. And it didn't work. And you're like, oh, okay, is it going to work this Sunday? You know, he was.
What made him so great, Jeff, in your mind? What made Tony Baselli so great?
He was a great combination of size, feet, intensity, strength, and demeanor. You know, I mean, you put all that together, and he had it all. You know, he had a nasty streak to him. He had ballerina feet, but he had the ability to anchor. Incredible length. You know, and that's just what made John Ogden so special, is that he had great length. And that he would touch you when you weren't even ready to be touched, you know. But Tony had all of that. And then, but the thing that I think that made him special was his demeanor. You know, he wanted to beat you up, and he was going to go from whistle to whistle. And the greater the player, the greater the intensity that he brought to the game. And that was special, you know, because great players have the ability to elevate their game against great players on the other side of the ball, and he had that ability.
It's amazing, and we're talking about tackles,
yeah,
because he mentioned the golden era of the tackle. You had Tony. You forgot Rofe and Pace.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were guys, me and Baselli were talking
but
about.
I don't put Rofe and Pace in that category.
No, I don't
either.
I put
those three, Tony, Ogden, and Walter Jones.
Me too. And then there's a drop-off.
Yeah.
I agree. But we were even talking about this the other day. A guy like Tony Jones, if he was in the league right now, would be considered one of the better tackles in the league.
No question.
I mean, that's how the position has dropped off significantly around the National Football League.
Yeah, and there were some other ones that were very good for a couple years. I mean, one of the great left tackles that I ever played against was actually kind of a journeyman, and it was Gerald Perry. Gerald Perry played for the Broncos, and then I played against him when he was with the Oakland Raiders. And he was probably the toughest game that I've ever had against the tackle. And I played against Will Wolford, Richmond Webb, you know, Chris Hinton.
Armstrong.
Bruce Armstrong with the Patriots, all of them.
I mean, these guys, every one of those guys right now would be a lock Pro Bowler if they played today. Yep. Every one of them.
We'll hear from Tony coming up. But they had some lean years at SC when he was out there, though. It wasn't like they were the dominant national force.
No, but he was a dominant
college player. Being
a Pac-10 guy then, and I spent a lot of time watching the Pac-10. He was a dominant football player. And I love to tell the story about when Tom was going to draft him. And I've told Tony this. Coughlin called me in his thing. He said, I got a tape for you. I want you to pub this kid. It's not a sexy pick to draft an offensive tackle with your first pick.
So he's playing a political game.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Coughlin was.
Oh, yeah. You're not surprised, are you? So I watched the tape, and I went, wow. And I actually, I forget what I wrote, but I wrote something about it. And, you know, and he was every bit that good. So, yeah, he was a great player.
Well, we'll hear from Tony coming up a little bit later, about 6:45 tonight from New York. The Jags are 2-11. A tough loss yesterday. We talked about this on Inside the Jaguars today. A tale of two halves has bitten this team a number of times this year. It did it again, 13-10 at halftime. Outscored 17-0, outgained by a mile and a half in the second half. And I mean, what happens from half to another?
You got to get more offense. I mean, pretty simple. I mean, you know, the offense has to perform at a higher level. You know, and it's not – you know, it's quarterback, it's offensive line, it's the running back position, the wide receiving core. You know, you had drops yesterday. You had an interception that was costly that gave, you know, the Texans a ball at point-blank range. They were able to take it in for a score. I mean, when you start playing better, you can overcome those things, but they're not playing well enough to even overcome one mistake like that right now. You know, and they hit a stretch there for a while where Denard Robinson was running the ball very well.
Sure.
Offensive line was running it very well. And right now, you know, Texans and everybody that's playing the Jaguars are saying, we're going to play 8 in a box, and if you can throw it, throw it. And they're not winning right now in the passing game. And it's a combination of everything. It's protection. It's accuracy. It's reads. It's routes. And – you know, that's kind of what you would expect from a very young football team. But at some point here, you know, and there's only 3 games remaining, you need to start to see some signs of progress, you know. And I'm talking the kind of progress that a fan can sink his teeth into and say, yeah, there you go. And you're seeing glimpses here and there. You know, Linder yesterday, when you watched the film, had a tremendous game. I mean, tremendous game. Marquise Lee, when he got the opportunity – tremendous performance. Cecil Shorts, a veteran guy you would depend on. Not so good, you know, and that has to be a dependable element of your offense when you have a veteran guy like that. Luke Jokel, when he had opportunities against J.J. Watt, very good. Well, he goes against half the player of J.J. Watt and Brooks Reed, gives up a hit and a sack. You know, I mean, that's the consistency thing that they've got to be able to find. And with a young team, that's a sign and a characteristic or a trait of that character of that, you know, youth. But sooner or later, you can't keep saying, well, we're young. Sooner or later, you got to say, it's time to perform.
What do you make of all that, Pete?
Well, I agree with him. I mean, and, you know, as people in this building have said, there's a mistake by a young player being made on every play. And that happens when you have youth. Somebody's going to mess up. And if you mess up and you run a wrong route, could be an interception. If you mess up and you miss your block, could be sack fumble. If you mess up and you drop a pass, could end a drive. So all those things are happening. And it, you know, I went back and I watched the Giants tape, and I looked at it on the offense, and I went, what was this? I mean, you look at it, you go, oh my God. There were plays where he put his foot in the ground and he had 3 guys in his face. There were plays where he made bad decisions. There were plays when the receivers ran bad routes. It's always something. And the good offenses, they'll have mistakes now and then, but there'll be 2 or 3 plays where there aren't the major mistakes. They're making major mistakes out there. One thing I did notice, I was just looking through some data today.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, The quarterback has been better in the fourth quarter.
You're talking Bortles.
Yes. The numbers bear it out.
Mentioned this earlier in the year,
I saw it earlier in the year, and I wanted to see if it would stay that way.
He's been that way consistently.
He's third in the league in passing yards in the fourth quarter. Now, I know they're behind a lot, but his yards per attempt number way up in the fourth quarter. His passer rating is his completion percentage way up in the fourth quarter. There's got to be some sort of message in there, and I'm not sure what it is. Tony tried to say, well, teams are playing soft, they're playing prevent, and they're letting them complete passes. I don't necessarily agree with that. It might have some factor in it, but the numbers are so – I mean, you look at the third down passing, he's way down here. You look at the fourth quarter passing, he's way up here. There's got to be some kind of correlation there.
How about other teams that compare to the record of the Jags? Like Raiders, how is Carr's fourth quarter?
Not as good. I can look him up in a second, but not nearly as good. I mean, he's third in the league right. in completion percentage in the fourth quarter. He's third. I think he's third or second in the league in yards per attempt in the fourth quarter. And his passer rating is significantly better in the fourth quarter than it is any other time.
But it's not amongst the top.
No, the passer rating is not.
About.
No, but the yards per attempt and completion percentage, they are among the top. And he's third in yards in the fourth quarter.
Well, and in the fourth quarter, for the most part, you're playing from behind. And you're simplifying a lot of things on offense because when you're playing behind, how many plays do you have to call? You know, when you're trying to make up for lost points,
or is he letting it rip more?
A little bit of both.
Playing, you know, you're not playing with the burden of if I make a mistake, they're going to get the ball and then we're going to be down 7-0 because you're already down 14 points.
Well, and he's shown that. I mean, the 2-minute drills are the same thing. I mean, the ability to run the 2-minute drill. It's I don't want to say the 2 minutes. Is the exact same thing as running an offense in the fourth quarter. It's not. But it's kind of along the same lines in that, you know, you only have X number of plays to run a 2-minute drill. You know, and you only have X number of coverages that you're going to run in that situation. So, and defensively, you're only facing a certain number, a limited number of packages. So, a lot of that has to do with it. But, there's a lot more to just throwing the ball well in the fourth quarter.
Right, but speed it up for him a little bit maybe.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
That's what they did last week against the Giants. They tried to run up tempo,
yeah,
you know, and it didn't really work, you know, because they weren't able to string any kind of plays together to make drives.
And he's got to start making the plays, but there's something inside those numbers to me, and I'm not sure what it is, but something.
We've got a whole show to dig
on this. We'll dissect those numbers.
I think we will. We'll come back in a moment. The Blood Alliance and Jaguars Gift of Life Blood Drive is Tuesday, December 9th. That's tomorrow. 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the East Touchdown Club at Everbank Field. Donors receive a T-shirt, a donor license plate, and a hero necklace. Plus, you'll be entered to win one of 12 pairs of tickets to the Titans-Jaguars game December 18th. That's Thursday Night Football. Jeff Loggeman back with us in a moment. More review of yesterday's Jags loss to the Texans and a preview of Jaguars All-Access coming up. Phone lines open as well, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. This is Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
You know, that was back into his game and did some good things there. I know on his zone reads, he was really good on that as far as reading his keys. You know, avoided sacks like we asked him to do. But I think when you look at, I always look at these principles, timing, accuracy, and decision-making for a quarterback. And I think timing and decision-making comes with experience. You know, accuracy, you hope that you have that. But, you know, the timing and decision-making, that's what he's going through right now.
Head coach Gus Bradley earlier today about his quarterback, Blake Bortles. Jaguars Monday continues. JP Shadrick with Pete Prisco and Jeff Loggeman. Sitting in with a preview of Jaguars All Access TV tonight. Tony Buscelli will join us over the phone from New York coming up. Jaguars defense, you know, the last couple of weeks, guys, has been a turnover machine. I mean, sacking the quarterback, sack fumbles, recovering fumbles, creating opportunities. Last week, two defensive touchdowns for the first time in a single game in franchise history. But this week, none of the above. Really, just what, two sacks in the game, and that's it.
Well, that's because the Texans were able to run the football.
That's right.
You know, Aaron Foster's a great back. You know, and you can make an argument that Houston has one of the better offensive lines in the league. I mean, they're running the ball very effectively. One of the top five teams rushing in the National Football League, and they've been able to do that without, you know, strong quarterback play. which I think speaks volumes about their offensive front. Dwayne Brown's playing back at a Pro Bowl caliber level. I think even Chris Myers, the center, is playing at a high level again. I thought both of those guys took a huge dip last year. You know, and they're getting some good play out of Brandon Brooks and then the right tackle who last year was not very good. You know, so that's the biggest key for the Texans is that they keep people off balance because they run the football. And this game against the Jaguars defense, they kind of, instead of running a lot of zone play, which is what Arian Foster is fantastic at because he's got great vision and he's got not only great vision but great patience, they ran a little bit of a trap game. And that trap game was something I don't think that they really expected to see because it wasn't something that the Houston Texans had shown much of. And it worked. And it worked. I mean, with a linebacking core that had basically, it was its, what, third game together, all of a sudden you see a different look and you got to kind of adjust on the fly. And, you know, had some misfits. Had some misfits by the linebacking core, some by the safety. You know, John Cyprian had, you know, actually had a good fit, but just didn't execute at the end of it on Arian Foster's long run, in which he also stiff-armed Josh Evans. But, you know, that's a good football team with a great back, and they had a nice little game plan.
Yeah, I thought if you're going to, you know, going into the game like that and you think, okay, I'm going to trap them, they must have looked on tape and thought, boy, this defense really gets up the field, which – that's kind of what, you know, the Jaguars are pretty good.
Well, it's the trap game is not so much designed for guys that get up the field, although that's one of the reasons why you can run it. But the trap game, too, when you have a trap, it alters the fits. And so what you're trying to do is not only stress the lineman, but you're also trying to stress the linebacker.
But if the tackle comes up the field, you trap him, then this guy's got to get over and fill that gap. And if he doesn't
that changes the gaps.
Right, and if he misses it, then yep. There's a huge hole.
It changes the gaps, and that's – you know, and sometimes traps can be, I mean, fantastic against teams that run, you know, eight in a box like the Jaguars do because you can get that second level in a hurry. It's not a developing play to where you can allow, you know, hustle and effort and great individual play to overcome maybe a mistake. You know, it's a quick game that is kind of feast or famine in a lot of instances.
I got a question for you, and I asked Tony this last week. 2 weeks ago, or three, whenever the Browns played the Texans, they got Watt on a trap with the tight end. He went in motion, came back across, and they cut him and ran a 35-yard gain inside of him. Why don't more teams trap him as fast as he comes barreling across the line of scrimmage?
Well, because he's not always – he's never – trap games are for guys that are fairly predictable. I mean, with J.J. Watt, he likes to do a lot of different things. I mean, they call a lot of different things for him, and you can't identify where he's going to be on every play.
Right. But you know, like yesterday, he moved around a lot, and he does move around a lot, but most of the time he was opposite Sam Young, right?
He was everywhere. He played – he had matchups against Luke Jokel. He had matchups against Linder. I think the only one that he never really lined up against that I remember was Zane Beatles, you know, as far as alignment pre-snap. But he lined up everywhere else, you know. So when you have a great player like that, and Romeo Crennel does a really good job of it as far as – keeping him on the move so offenses can identify exactly where he's going to be. And that's a smart thing to do. I mean, when you got a great player like that, if you always have him at the same spot every time, you can game plan for him being there and then adjust your game plan accordingly. It's hard to do that when they move him around, and that's smart of them.
One more thing about him. Does he get away with playing a little bit of a freelance style.
Tune in to Jaguars.com for Film Room Friday.
He does. Like, if you lined up in that exact same position and played the position the way he plays the position, you would get yelled at by your coach.
Yeah. And I'd also probably get some flags.
I mean, because he's...
I'll just give you this tease. Film Room Friday, I call it Bruce Smith Syndrome.
Really? Gets away with stuff, huh?
Oh, yeah. Great players do, though. I mean, just like in basketball. I mean, you're a basketball fan, Pete.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, when LeBron James gets just touched on the elbow, I mean, what happens? I mean, just literally touched to where, you know, it might not even touch actually the skin but the hair on his arm, right?
Right.
Whistle.
Tweet. Foul line.
Yeah. Yep. You know, and that's J.J. Watt. I mean, that's what happens when you
have
a great player.
What I meant also, yeah, he gets that, but does he, like, jump around his responsibility and still yet have the athletic ability and quickness to make the play?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know, because I watch every one of his plays, and I'll sit, because he's the one guy included in my thing every week, and I'll go back and I'll say, yeah, he made a great play, but I don't think he was supposed to do that.
Well, sometimes he probably is, and sometimes he may not be. I mean, a lot of the outside swims that he has, and they may, you know, say to Jared Crick, who plays the similar position but the opposite side, they may say to him, okay, you're in an outside shade, and that's your gap, so make sure you play it stout. Well, J.J. Watt, he can put a swim move up the field and then actually plant his foot and come back and be two gaps back over to the inside in an instant.
It's incredible.
He's that great of a player.
It's incredible.
But I think overall they did a pretty good job against him, you know, and that's one of the focuses that I'm going to be looking at with the film room tonight is that, you know, with his ability to make great plays, how good was he yesterday? You know, he had three sacks in the ballgame. How many of those sacks were actually to where he beat somebody? You know, he had one against Sam Young, which was an excellent move. But I thought for the most part, Sam did a good job against him. You know, there was – and Boselli calls them – legitimate sacks. You know how offensive linemen
are. Very defensive.
You got to beat somebody to get a sack. No, it doesn't work that way. But J.J. got two of them just because of great effort. One of them was a swim move, and I think that Mercedes Lewis was supposed to get a piece of him before he rolled, you know, kind of released to a bootleg route and didn't get a piece of him. Sam Young, I think, was expecting it, and Sam couldn't do anything with it. I mean, that wasn't Sam's responsibility. You know, so two of them I would call effort sacks, but, I mean, that's some of them come that way.
He gets a lot of them that way.
One of them was just an outstanding rush against Sam Young. The guy's – he's a powerful man.
They'll get him again in 3 weeks, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's
don't get so excited, Jeff. I mean, geez.
Well, he's – you know, hey, look, I love watching and calling a game that J.J. Watt plays in, and sometimes it's difficult because, you know, you want to watch him every play. You know, but at the same time, you got to watch the ball. You know, and you got to watch everything. But you do catch yourself at times. I mean, just like when you watch film of the Houston Texans, you watch J.J. Watt first, and then you go back and you watch the rest of the play and everybody else. He's that good.
I watch his plays every week. I'm amazed at the hands, the quickness.
There's a few players that I would say in my 26 years now of being in the NFL in some shape, you know, way or fashion, whatever you want to call it. Reggie White was a guy I used to love to watch. Bruce Smith, you would watch. Lawrence Taylor, when I was a young player, you would always watch. And Albert Haynesworth, in that 1 year that he had that was just tremendous with the Tennessee Titans, you would watch him every snap. He was playing like a man possessed before he got his big deal in Washington and then just kind of faded away. But there hasn't been many players that you would just sit there and watch. Now, the greatest group that I ever watched as a group of front was back when the Philadelphia Eagles had Reggie, Clyde, Jerome. I mean, those guys there, you had to watch it five times.
Golic.
No, not Golic.
He was on that group. He was a backup.
Yeah, you didn't watch Golic much. But no. You watched those three guys, they were unbelievable.
But as far as individual, you're right on those guys. And from when I'm going to date myself here, but Alan Page.
Mm-hmm.
When you could – Alan Page weighed probably 240 pounds and played defensive tackle and was – he couldn't be blocked. Remember,
I'm sure the same could be said for, you know, Mean Joe Green.
Mean Joe.
Merlin Olsen.
Bob Lilly.
Yeah. You know, Randy White.
Yeah, Randy White was fantastic.
You know, they call him the Manster.
Yeah, he was fantastic. I mean, it's just – but this – we're talking about all-time greats here, and we're already putting J.J. into that mix. That's how good he is.
I think it was his rookie year, maybe his second year, and I was telling myself, I said, this guy is a great player. And he was going, he's not great. How can you call him great? He's only played like, you know, X number of games. I said, I'm just telling you, you know, being an aficionado of defensive linemen, this guy is a great player. He can do things that normal people cannot do. And he does it with great effort, which, you know, Bruce Smith didn't always go.
No.
With great effort.
This guy plays every play.
He plays every play.
Even now, when the game's decided, he plays.
There are a few plays every now and again that you see this year that all of a sudden the effort's not what it was like last year. But it's, you know, the percentage is so small. The one thing, though, that's kind of curious is that when you watch J.J. Watt and, you know, like the Blake Bortles scramble and he got tripped up and he tags him down, and then he's doing the celebration. You ever watch his teammates' reaction to some of that? It's not so good. You know, you probably spent more time in that locker room in Houston with, you know, guys that are around him. But you can just see that, you know, like when he scores his touchdowns, as a tight end. You know, most defensive linemen score a touchdown, and like the whole offense is going over there. I mean, right. A defensive lineman catches a touchdown pass, and they want to celebrate with him. You don't see that.
You think there's some envy there?
I don't. Yeah, something
maybe
that's just.
Maybe he should just shut up every once in a while. In that mic'd up segment the other day.
Oh, that was fantastic. You didn't like that?
No, by the way, I'm trying to think of something.
What he was picked one pick behind a certain player.
Yeah, Blaine Gabbert. Yeah, that's right. There you go. Who you got tonight? All access, by the way.
You didn't listen from before?
I did, but
Marquise Lee.
Let's promote it again.
Marquise Lee. He's been really nice in the last 3 weeks. You can see that he's clearly making progress. I wish he had at least one more target in the second half, especially on the 4th and 20, to where Blake Bortles chose to throw it underneath to Toby Gerhart. In that situation, you quarterback, you got to give your your guy a chance. You know, maybe you get a penalty, interference, whatever it may be. But give Marquise Lee an opportunity at that because he was the one guy that was past the first down stripe. But I'm looking forward to talking with him. He's a young man that's got a lot of talent. A lot of talent. The single greatest one-on-one practice that I've ever seen was this summer with Marquise Lee when ESPN had him mic'd up and was doing some filming of him. He was dominant. Dominant.
See, I think he's starting to learn about the game, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Takes time.
It's coming around. That's tonight at 7. Sam Kavaras, Jeff Loggeman, and Marquise Lee on Channel 4. Hey, Jags 365 season ticket members, you have your personalized season ticket renewal brochure for next year. Plenty of amazing prizes left for those who have renewed, including an away team trip and a suite for a 2015 home game. Check your inbox. Renew your season tickets today. The Jaguars are giving you more this upcoming 2015 season. Call 633-2000 and select option 1. Phone lines are open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. This is Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HenneneAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
They're trying to find answers now. You know, and we talk to them about the answers, and sometimes the answer is we got to do it longer and harder than the other team. And we're not doing that right now. You know, so we'll be good. We'll be all right.
Head coach Gus Bradley earlier today from his day after press conference, Jaguars Monday, JP Shadrick, Pete Prisco. Now we can get serious, Pete.
Yeah.
Jeff Loggeman's
gone. It's
like
those phone lines up. People want to get angry now. We don't have Buscelli to talk them off the ledge, you know?
We got 15 minutes, well, less than that until Buscelli. So 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Let's get to an injury report first, though. Gus Bradley had the announcements today. They'll update the status of Tommy Streeter, wide receiver. Had an oblique injury. Kari Fort had a hamstring injury. Defensive end Andre Branch, groin injury later in the week. They didn't. None of those three played in the game on Sunday. So Derek Marks had a neck strain Sunday. He's expected to practice Wednesday. Those are really the only things that came out of Sunday's game on the injury front. That's good news.
So Derek should be in the Pro Bowl. He's not going to get there, though.
So the vote, okay, explain the voting. Fans get a certain percentage of votes,
players,
right? And right, players third, get the bulk of it.
Right? A third. Isn't it a third, and a third from the coaches?
Is it really?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's the way it used to be, unless they changed it.
Wow.
So the problem fans, is okay. the fans vote kills Jacksonville. Just kills them. Always has, always will. Because fans, not only will they pick the players on their own team, but they'll pick the players that they know. So they'll pick the stars from the good teams, Cowboys, you know, teams that have a lot of appearances on
TV.
So it always hurts a player like Zenderic Marks. It hurt guys like Fred Taylor and Jimmy Smith over the years. I mean, and they were good teams and good players. It's just the market hurts them.
How do you overcome that then? I mean,
win
games.
Look, people identify with Seattle.
Play primetime games.
Seattle is being identified with now because they're winning and they're good. And people know Richard Sherman, and people know this guy, and they know Russell Wilson, and they know that, and they know Pete Carroll, and they, you know, so you win, and people. It doesn't matter where you play, you know. People always say, "Well, look, Seattle, look how marquee team they are." 10 years ago, they weren't a marquee team. You know, after they went to that Super Bowl that one year and lost to the Steelers, mm-hmm. They weren't a marquee team for a while. You got to win to be a marquee team. If this team ever got on a run, got into the mix for a Super Bowl, and you know, not necessarily win it, but get in it and then stay there for a couple years and maybe win one, than the players who will get their due.
What was the – it was 99 where they had like four Pro Bowlers here, right?
And should have had more.
Or five. Or,
well, I mean, the team was – lost two games in the regular season. They were number one on defense, and they had fantastic offensive team.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who the Pro Bowlers were, but I think it was Tony, Jimmy, Fred,
Searcy,
Leon. Yep. And on defense, I think Hardy went. But they could have had a couple other guys. I mean, look, they've always had guys that have been shunned here over the years for not being a marquee, you know, marquee team in a big time market. It's always going to hurt them, and it's unfair. It hurts a guy like Tony in the Hall of Fame. It hurts.
Yeah, it does.
It hurts. You know, somebody.
Fred
somebody,
Taylor.
I this week, Marshawn Lynch was on a pregame show saying how his stance with the media is going to hurt his Hall of Fame chances, and I nearly choked. Hall of Fame chances. He's not in the same conversation with Fred Taylor.
Right.
Fred Taylor averaged nearly 4.7 yards per carry. Marshawn Lynch averages 4.2 in his career. He's not in the conversation. And yet, if you ask the average man on the street in New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, who's a better running back, Marshawn Lynch or Fred Taylor, because of Skittles and beast mode and everything else in the Super Bowl, they'd probably say Marshawn Lynch. And that's unfair to players in this market.
Let's go to the phone lines, Pete.
Yeah,
I'm live. We can talk about this for a while.
I'm a live
wire. We'll get you on the Seattle quarterback coming up in a little while.
Play good yesterday. You played good yesterday.
We'll get to that coming up in the second hour tonight. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Let's go to the phone lines. Alex on the south side has been hanging on for a little bit. Wants to talk about the offensive line. What's up, Alex?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I just had a quick question. Since this was a major, major theme early in the season and even in the offseason beforehand, I know it's become very critical around Jacksonville and around the league of the offensive line not really performing up to the standards that we had hoped in the offseason. But a big thing was the gelling of the offensive line, the communication. And while we may not see that stats-wise, I mean, you guys obviously have much more keen eye for these sorts of things. Is that something being seen on your end and on Bradley's end and all the other offensive coaches, or is it just not there at all?
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. What do you think, Pete?
I think it just takes time. Gelling.
People don't want time. Well, people want it now.
How many games has the offensive five that should be starting and will be starting have they played together?
Not many.
Well, and they certainly didn't play together yesterday because they had a backup at right tackle.
That's right.
So it's been in and out, and that takes time. Not only that, you have a rookie center, and you have a right guard who's a rookie.
That's
so.
Right.
Yeah, add all that up. It's going to take some time.
How many lines in the league have the starting five that they envisioned at the start of the year?
Right now?
Probably not many.
Yeah, not many. Like San Diego's on their fourth center. You know, New England went to a rookie center and their line got better, but they have, you know, two guards around them that were former centers. One of them a former Jaguar, by the way, Dan Connolly. You could make a roster of former Jaguars and it might compete.
Half of them are in Baltimore, right?
Well, you got Justin Forsett, you got Daryl Smith, you got Jeremy Mincy, you got Terrence Knighton, you got Justin Durant before he went down. I mean, yeah, but obviously this team is building in a different direction. I hear that all the time about this guy, and this guy. Why are they let him go? But you're building for youth, and you're trying to get the 2016, 15 compete for a playoff spot, 16 compete for a Super Bowl. That's the way it has to be.
Go long in the fuel-efficient Ford Escape. See your Southern Ford dealer today, proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. Phone lines are open. We'll get to calls coming up. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Tony Boselli will join us from New York City when we come back. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Come celebrate the last home game of the season with the biggest, boldest tailgate event of the year before the Thursday night game against Tennessee. Features a live performance from J.J. Gray and Mofro, a craft beer fest featuring local beers and local cuisine from the best food trucks in Jacksonville, all during the NFL Network pregame show. Get tickets now. For the Thursday night game, Jaguars.com or call 633-2000. Pete, are you a craft beer guy?
No.
Not at all?
No. Give me my Miller Lite.
Well, you're not invited to this.
Give me my Miller Lite and an Amstel Bright, which is in Aruba, and I'm happy. And I'll drink a Corona now and then and a Stella. That's about it.
You're a simple man.
I'm a simple man.
You very much are.
I think we got a simple man on the line over here.
A simple college football Hall of Famer joins us now from New York City.
Is it official yet?
Yeah, when's the thing?
Hold on. You went from a simple man of just saying Miller Lite, and then you named like 15 beers afterwards, including Amstel Lite, which is not the simplest beer.
Right, Amstel Bright. It's only sold in Aruba.
That's my whole point.
Yeah, well.
Who goes to
Aruba?
Made
my point for you. You're like this high maintenance,
no,
like,
I'm not.
Picky person.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
Probably stick your pinky
out. Let me ask you this. Are you a Hall of Famer yet? Yes or no?
Yeah, USC.
No, we're talking about the College Football Hall of Fame. Are you inducted?
No, it's tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, yes. The Waldorf, big place.
You got the whole brood up there, the family up there?
Oh, my, yes, chaotic.
Well, no, they should be there.
It's a huge event, Tony.
Yeah, I'm about to jump.
Man.
Unbelievable. Man's going into the College Football Hall of Fame, and he's bitching.
He'll take you right out.
I'm joking.
You know what, Tony? I'm ending the crusade to get you into the Pro Football Hall of Fame because you won't like it.
Wait until he gets to Canton.
He'll be really happy about that.
He'll
be like, oh, my God, there's 300 people here, and look at all these Jaguar fans. I'm miserable.
I'll be happy. I'm happy. I'm joking. Listen, I'm looking forward to it. We had a good day in New York today. It was a little cold up here. We walked around, ate a ton of food, good pizza, a little cheesecake, did the touristy things. And then we're going out to a very good Italian meal tonight. Looking forward to it.
Nice.
It'll be big.
Yeah, you know, so listen, I love it. It's just, you know, we got 5 kids and 2 hotel rooms. It's
Yeah, but you got a little extra money to spend. I saw you and Brunel and Fred Taylor got money for autographs the other day.
That's right.
What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And I know you didn't go over there for no gratis.
Rosenblum's, the whole deal.
Yeah.
You don't want to know how much they paid me for autographs. Some of them I had to pay people to give me the sign.
Well, see, now if you get in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you would be worth a lot more.
I was about to say, you could charge more as a College Football Hall of Fame.
Can you get to work, Pete? I mean, I'll give you, listen, you'll be front row. I mean, you'll be one of the special VIP invites because of all the work you've done.
I'm working on it. You know that. I'm working on it.
I know.
You might want to work on the guy who has the actual vote in this city.
You know me. I've told you all along.
I know you're not going to politic for it.
I will not politic.
Let's move along. Of course, the
Let's move along. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Let's move along. The Jags are now 2-11. Tony, what stands out the most about yesterday's game to you? Why did this turn so suddenly yesterday?
So you want the positive or the negative? Tell me what you want first.
Give us the positive first.
Then we'll
hear the negative.
Yeah.
The positive is I thought the offensive line played well. They did a good job. I mean, listen, they protected well. I wanted to throw up some of the stuff I read on Twitter last night and this morning and in the paper. It's nonsense. I mean, go watch the tape. J.J. Watt did nothing. He was a non-factor. He had one sack. He beat Sam Young one play.
Other than that,
he was a non-factor in the game.
He had three
sacks. One was a naked bootleg where no one blocks him.
That was on Mercedes Lewis. That was on Mercedes Lewis.
He needs to get a little bit of a piece of him, but the hope of the play is that he's going to chase the play down on the backside. That's what you want. You don't worry about that backside guy. And the other, Blake slips, and J.J. was the first to tag him. I mean, and he didn't beat anyone on that play either, by the way. So I thought the offensive line, not just J.J. Watt, I thought they did a good job overall. Blake had time. The pocket was clean for the most part. You know, they ran block pretty well. I would have liked to maybe see us stick to the run a little bit more, a couple more run calls. But, you know, it was but I thought the O-line took a big step. I thought they played well. Perfect? No. Could it be better? Yes, but in the right direction, 100%.
Okay. How about
by the way, Brandon Linder's going to be really good. By the way,
yeah, he's their best. He's their best lineman right now. He's their best lineman.
It's funny because
Luke Jokel is. And by the way, Luke Jokel, all the panic of him. He's a bust. Is way overrated. He's playing better as well too. The last couple games.
All the calls we got last night in the post game was about how bad the offensive line played. It's
yeah, because they don't know what they're doing. Listen, because you can't. This is my thing with the whole sack thing. And I was actually disappointed about J.J. Watt. I don't need him waving his finger like he's Manute Bol or Dikembe Mutombo or whoever did that in basketball and doing all this raising his finger when no one blocks him. It's great. I mean, come on, you gotta be kidding me. Listen, he's a fabulous
player. You're getting worked up over there, J.J. Watt.
He's the best player in football. I mean, a defensive player in football. I'm not taking anything from him. But if you watch that game, there was time. The offensive line did fine. That was not the issue.
How many times did he bull rush? What?
Zero.
There you go.
He tried to convert to a bull rush one time. No, he's not a power guy.
That's not what he is. Right. He's all speed and hands.
No, he's a dancer. I wouldn't even worry. I'm telling you, the more I watch him, he's very good. Please hear this right away. But he's not a power rusher. Take away his speed. And I watched, the first set of the game, Brandon Letter sets perfectly. Just sits there, waits for him, punches him, stones him on the line of scrimmage. I'm like, okay, that's it.
He does have good hands. He does have good hands, though, Tony.
Oh, fabulous. No, I'm not taking anything away from Pete. I'm still saying he's the best player, defensive player in football. But just be patient. Take your time. Don't get, and take some shots at him. That's what I do. But, I thought Sam Young did a good job. Yeah, he had a terrible set on one play. He got beat. It happens, though. I guess my point is I'm not even going to mention who wrote it.
I saw who you came after. You came after Gene Fournette. Yeah, You called him out on Twitter. You called him out on Twitter.
It was nauseating, Pete. I mean, it was nauseating.
You can't call a guy out on Twitter and then back away from it all year.
What did you say, Tony?
I said I called him. I said it's ridiculous what he said. It's not accurate. Watch the tape. Watch the game. I mean, he basically wrote an article making it sound like he whipped Sam Young every play, and Sam Young was scared of him, and the offensive line was shaking in their boots, and he terrorized them. That's what he said. He terrorized them. I mean, I don't know what he watched. You know what he watched is broken plays and Blake Bortles falling down and J.J. Watt playing tag. That's what he watched. He didn't watch the tape.
Fired up today.
What was going on?
You're fired up in New York City. Oh, that hotel.
I'm just saying that it bothers me when you take shots at guys like that. I promise you right now, Sam Young was not worried and scared of J.J. Watt. There was no one on that offensive line scared of J.J. Watt. Not one person. They respected him without a doubt. And he didn't terrorize the Jaguars. I mean, not even close. And so for someone to write that, I think it's ridiculous. I thought it was dumb. And so I wasn't going to sit there.
JP can't even cut you off when you're 3,000 miles away. He's trying to cut you off.
I thought Ryan O'Halloran did a good job. He actually broke down per play and made it very obvious. But, I got no response. Gene didn't even respond to me, though. I was surprised. I got no response to my Twitter.
Wow. How about that? Just called him out. You're waiting for a response.
No, I don't want a response. I love Gene. I have nothing against Gene Fournette. He's a good friend. I like him. I just completely disagree with his article. I thought it was a terrible article.
We need to take a timeout.
I'm sure he thinks I played terrible games, so sometimes it happens.
Yeah, sometimes it does. Tony, we'll be back with you in just a moment. The Copy Facts Face-Off is right around the corner.
Don't feel sorry for him because he's going in the Hall of Fame either.
Don't worry about that.
He feels bad for himself, it sounds like. Not a big fan of that. Phone lines open. We'll get to calls a little later. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. More with Tony Boselli and Pete Prisco after this. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
The Blood Alliance is making a special call to anyone with type O blood. They're at a critically low capacity for type O. If you're type O positive or O negative, donate this week to the Blood Alliance either at the Gift of Life Blood Drive tomorrow in the East Club at Everbank Field or at a Blood Alliance location near you. Jaguars Monday continues. JP Shadrick, Pete Prisco here in Jacksonville. Tony Boselli is on the phone in New York.
Scolding his kids.
Apparently so. He called one of his kids out on Twitter today, too, for eating cheesecake. Tony, what's up with that?
No, that was misunderstood. That was me. He actually was being disciplined. I was saying, I'm getting fatter. Oh. I can't stop eating. I've got a disease. I was eating chocolate chip cookies last night like they're going out of style. I've had pizza and cheesecake today. I'm getting ready. We're going to do an Italian meal. I guarantee I'll consume at least 4,000 or 5,000 calories right now.
How many slices of pizza today?
Four, I think.
With stuff on them, too? Was there, toppings on them?
Yeah, sausage and pepperoni, mushrooms, garlic.
That's an easy 3,000-calorie lunch for you.
And the only reason I stopped is because we ran out of pizza. I wanted more.
At least you admit you got a problem. 1-800-OVER-EAT.
I can't stop.
Right after Thanksgiving, too. It is time for the Copy Facts Face-Off. A little early tonight. Since Tony's got to go eat thousands of calories a little bit later. The St. Louis Rams, Tony, Pete, sent their captains out for Sunday's game against Washington. But the captains for the coin toss were all the players that they selected from the trade with the Redskins. The question tonight is, was that a Bush League move by Fisher and the Rams? And Tony, you won last week, so you get to go first.
No, it was great. It's a way to stick it to your opponent before you even start the game, getting his head. Now, the reality is, most of the Redskins players have no idea who they traded for or who anyone is, because players are not the smartest group of individuals that really track what's going on in the NFL and who got drafted or where and such. But as far as just the overall sticking it to Daniel Snyder and just getting into his crawl a little bit, I love it. I think it was genius. It's classic Jeff Fisher playing the mental game and just never, you know, always finding a way to, you know, get under someone's skin. And it just shows, and it's a reminder to all of us, that the Redskins are inept. It's a dysfunctional. They've gone to the level of the Oakland Raiders as far as the way they're run, the organization, just the entire show that has become the Washington Redskins. It's more about what they do off the field, what the owner says or doesn't say, who they draft or don't draft, than wins and losses.
All right.
All right, yeah. It might not affect the players, but it's a message sent, Bush League message sent to the organization. Jeff Fisher, with all those winning seasons that he has in St. Louis, is rubbing it in the face of the Washington Redskins. You got to be kidding me, Jeff. Absolutely classless move. Look, I get it. You made a deal, and you got the best of the deal. But now you're taking their head, and you're rubbing it in the dirt. To me, that was classless. Maybe you could have added a couple more players that you got in that trade, the ones you cut already who were home flipping the coin flip in front of their own house. To me, it was just Bush League. And you know what it reminds me of? It's just Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher, and you should know this better than anybody, Tony. Jeff Fisher loves to twist a knife and twist it and twist it. And remember the comment about the home field, the third home field or the fourth home field or whatever it was, Alltel Stadium back then? Well, this is the same type of thing. Look, did it impact the game? No. Was it a Bush League classless act to rub it in an organization's face? Absolutely, 100% garbage.
Should've come on, Pete. You know you're not being generous right now. You like to rub it in people's faces.
I rub it in people's faces, but there's also got to be a line you don't cross. That's crossing the line.
Listen, here's the line you don't cross: is if you're not going to physically or you know do anything unethical or immoral or criminal, then that's the line. If it's under that, go for it. It's like no different than finishing a block and you get on top of them and you rub their face in the dirt a little bit extra. That's what you're supposed to do. Let them know you're there and let them know you won.
Whatever. Who are you letting know?
That's why it's
who
great.
Are you letting know? An owner that made
Snyder,
a deal?
You're letting Daniel Snyder know.
So you know what? Daniel Snyder should put up a sign saying, how many winning seasons have you had in St. Louis, Jeff? Any? None.
You got to take what you can get. You got to take what you can get, and that's winning the draft. It's winning the offseason.
What has it done for St. Louis? He made the greatest block. He sent out a bunch of players that he acquired for RG3 and said, look what we got for RG3. Yeah? What did you get for him? Yeah, but they're winning season. So obviously
that backfires on
you. It comes right back to Jeff Fisher, right in his face.
I'm not saying whether the draft's worked out or not. I'm just saying it's a great move.
It's a Bush League move all the way around.
Your time is up.
Wow.
We're trying to make it so we're tied. That's unbelievable.
Wow.
There's no way he won that one, too.
Come back. Hey, but Pete, now that it's over, tell the Jim you loved it. I didn't.
I think it's Bush. I'll be honest with you, Tony. I don't mind taunting the player, like another player taunting another player, but I think when you're messing with an organizational decision like that,
The fact that I love it because Daniel Snyder, you gotta be kidding me. He's such a mess. I love that they're just showing him.
Yeah, what a mess
he really is.
I would have come back in the post game locker room and I would have had a press conference with Dan Snyder and said, "Boy, I tell you what, Jeff's right. They did get a lot for that deal, but look how many winning seasons he's had in St. Louis since he's been there." I think Jeff Redskins.
That's the one thing they have. The Redskins have the one winning season out of the two organizations.
Right.
That's true.
The draft.
Right.
Yeah, they win, right?
Right. They
yeah.
won. Just like I've won every time here, and Joe feels sorry for
it. No.
Joe feels sorry
that
for
was
you.
A whipping. I know what it is. Feel pretty good about myself.
Here's the deal. If we got to the last week and you were eliminated from playoff competition, it wouldn't matter. I wouldn't play hard. And so you want to try and make me better?
It's a dominating performance right now. Hey, let me, before I got to go, let me say one thing that I didn't get to, the disappointing thing of yesterday's game.
Yes.
You know, I thought the defensive front for the Jaguars would play better. And that offensive line for the Texans, give them credit, they're playing good football right now. They've only given up one sack. They only gave up one sack coming into the game in the last three. I mean, I think they gave a sack and a half, but they're all covered sacks. Late pressure, you know, meaningless pressure. They controlled the line of scrimmage. They ran the ball. Aaron Foster was a beast. And Ryan Fitzpatrick had all day long. That was a little bit surprising and disappointing.
So is the Texans line playing good now, or are they a good line?
No, they're playing good. Dwayne Brown's playing back at a very high level. He might be the best left tackle in football right now. And he's doing a good job. I don't think they're all that great at the other four positions, but they proved me wrong. They played well yesterday.
Yeah, they've been better the last 3 weeks. No doubt about it. Chris Myers looks like he's getting more comfortable again, don't you think, Tony?
No, he can't reach one technique anywhere more, but he makes up with it, you know, with the craftiness that he has.
Yeah, and the guard Brooks is okay.
I mean, I watching tape, I thought they were average, but gosh, he played well yesterday. I mean,
Let's finish with this, Tony. Last couple of minutes with you before you go stuff your face and have 4,000 calories tonight. Best memory of your career at USC? It's going tomorrow. You're going in the Hall of Fame. What stands out the most? And don't say the Freedom Bowl.
No, you know, I guess the disappointing. It's disappointing at the time because we didn't get to go to the Rose Bowl. We went to the Rose Bowl 3 years before I got there, and the year after I left. So that was kind of lousy, but I think the greatest memory about SC was the relationships and the history and the great players that played at that school and that are around. I mean, that was an amazing experience. I mean, even afterwards, I went to a dinner, you know, a couple years ago. It was me, Ronnie Lott, Marcus Allen, Junior Seau before he passed away, Anthony Munoz, Sam Bam Cunningham. I mean, Willie McGinnis. I mean, it was an amazing. Where else can you do that? What other school produces those type of players and be around that when you played in an atmosphere was awesome.
Very good. Congratulations.
Shouldn't
have
played your fight song tonight, though. I know that much.
Guys, I will see you next week. Miss being there this week.
It's quiet in here without you.
It is very quiet in here. We appreciate you. And good luck to you tomorrow night. Have a good one. Thank you, Tony. Tony Buscelli from New York.
He couldn't throw that phone down fast enough to get out to that meal, could he?
Got to get that antipasto going, right?
Oh, my God. Hey, in some of those places in New York,
you bet.
That could be a three-hour meal in some of those Italian restaurants.
Yeah, what are some good I've never been to New York. I don't know.
Name-wise? Yeah. I mean, I like going to Little Italy. I always go, when I go, and I don't even know the names of them. I just pop in and I see it because there's every single one of them is good, every one of them. If they're serving pasta in a white bowl, you know it's good.
A white bowl? Why is that?
I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense.
Am I right, Joe? Every good Italian restaurant serves their Italian food in a white bowl or white plates. White, very white. Wow. Clean, like white looking. And the red sauce kind of. Yep. Is that true? That's true.
Makes it brighter.
That's a Priscoism of life. Just, I'll throw them out there every now once in a while.
That's interesting to know. I might learn a lot from you, Pete.
There you go. You'd be surprised.
Phone lines are open. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. We'll take a timeout and take more of your calls. A little more Jaguars talk ahead. We'll also recap Week 14 of the National Football League coming up. Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida, the official waste provider of the Jags, proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here. Jaguars Monday continues after this on Jaguars Radio.
Take a look at myself and see, you know, what's going on, why we're doing this. And, you know, if we're a team that is momentum, a little bit base, then in the second half, if things don't go our way, what happens? you know, and that's why, you know, we don't like to talk much about it. You're trying to find out our personality, who we are, and, you know, we hope to build on that. But it's a great question. Why do some things happen? Why do we have drops? Why do we, you know, not get in on a fourth or third and one sneak? You know, it looks like we've got an opportunity to get it. Why these things happen? I think we're going to make them happen ourselves.
Head coach Gus Bradley. Earlier today is day after press conference. Jaguars Monday continues. J.P. Shattuck with Pete Briscoe. Tony Boselli's in New York. Jeff Loggeman joined us a little earlier tonight. Phone lines are open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. He's got to look at himself and see what he can do differently to get him going. What do you think about that?
I'm waiting for the time he comes in there on a weekday, on a Monday, after a bad game, and maybe it's next week if they lose at Baltimore, and he says, okay, enough of this being young talk. It's time this team started growing together. A lot of these guys have been in the league now. This will be their 14th game. If you were playing 15 years ago, that would be the end of your season. You have two more games. No more you're young anymore. It's time they start playing and growing up and being accountable for the mistakes you are making.
You think he's doing that behind closed doors, though?
Don't know.
I'm sure he has to be, right?
But see, I get where Gus has been with this team. I understand that. You have a fragile group of young players because there's some uncertainty there as to what they can and can't do. So if you call them out publicly, you're going to mess with their psyche. I understand that. And he's a smart guy when it comes to that psychological stuff and how to play that game with the players. So he knows better than I do. But I think there's a point, and you know, maybe it's not this year. But can you hold off on that until the first game next year? I don't think you can, which is why I think in the next 2 weeks, if there's a bad loss at Baltimore this week, which is entirely possible because they can rush the heck out of the passer. They got the leading sacker in the league in Doomerville, and Suggs can get after the quarterback, and they had six of them this past weekend against Miami.
And they're in the thick of the race too.
Right.
Yep.
And if it happens this week, then me personally, I would expect him to come out there and say, you don't got to call him out. You just come out and you say, enough's enough. These guys, it's time to start growing up and becoming NFL players. No, the training wheels are off. You're on your bike on your own. Now ride the damn thing, and if you can't learn how to ride it and ride it well, then you're not going to be here.
Your point, I guess, is do it now so there's a couple of games to see if it responds, right?
Correct, because if you wait until the first of next year, then you're going into next year with a bunch of young guys that are supposed to be that much more advanced. And now, if they start playing poorly in the first couple weeks next year, then you do it already. You might be 1-3, 1-4, 2-4. Do it now. I think if they get blown out this week, I think he steps to that podium on Monday next week and he starts bringing it up and saying, "That's it. The training wheels are off. Start riding your damn bike."
What training wheels are you seeing right now?
The excuse making.
Okay.
Oh, they're too young. There's a guy young on this. There's young here. He's young there. No. That stops. Move forward. Get it over with. Move forward. And I think maybe he is behind closed doors. But the perception, and you guys will probably back me up on this, the perception is he's coddling him to a point. And I don't know if he is. And I understand if he is. They are a young team.
They're young.
That's a young offense.
Youngest team in the league.
But the offense has six guys at one pointer on the field as rookies. The left tackle's playing left tackle for the first time technically in his career in the NFL. So, yeah. But at some point, 14 games in, you got to look there and say, you know what? It can't be 38-7. It's got to be 23-13 or 23-14 or 23-21 or 27-21. If they go up there and get knocked on their butt in Baltimore and it's bad, then I think that's the time.
Let's go to the phone lines, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. John on the south side has been hanging on for a while and wants to talk about the quarterback. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. So I guess I want to speak about the quarterback because we knew coming to this season it's all about developing the quarterback. And I watch Bridgewater and Derek Carr, and those guys are playing better. But if you look at our guys, they're regressing. I mean, Bortles hasn't shown he can be accurate in the pocket. Each week he looks worse, and I think the coaches are getting him out of the pocket because they don't trust him anymore.
No, I think I think they're getting him out of the pocket because they don't trust their offensive line. That's part of the problem. And I'm with you. I think he needs to stay there more. I've said this the entire season, the bootlegs and everything. That's not where he's going to make his – that's not his bread and butter. That's not – I know he can move, but there's a real concern there when you start moving him too much.
A, you don't want your quarterback to develop into that guy. You want him developing into the other guy.
But if they don't trust the offensive line and they think he's going to get hit, you're okay with him taking those shots.
Yeah, he's going to take shots. He's going to learn how to get the ball out. He's going to learn how to slide the pocket. He's going to learn how to move. Subtle slide in the pocket is significantly better than a move to the outside where you're getting hit from an oncoming defender or you're running. I just don't think. And again, I go back to those stats in the fourth quarter. Those stats in the fourth quarter to me are just, they're eye-opening. For a guy who hasn't had a good season, his fourth quarter numbers are pretty good. So I know that they play softer and it's not as intense in the fourth quarter if you got a lead, but their numbers are so different that there's got to be something there. And I think he plays better when he's allowed to play faster, looser, chuck it.
You see it on two-minute drives with him.
Correct. There's another example of it. So why not go into a game and do it that way?
But
tell him it's the fourth quarter. You're going to play like it's the fourth quarter.
But see, I think the reasoning behind it that we've heard from Jed Fish and all that, well, if it doesn't work, if you go three and out and you have the ball for a minute, three incompletions,
you're not
– the defense is on the field that
so
much longer.
So what?
Right?
So what? Then they got to do their job and get them off. To me, it's all about –
they're already at a breaking point anyway.
You know what the read option running is for Blake Bortles to me?
What?
And the read option and the Denard Robinson, that's more an example of the training wheels. Get them off. Take them off. The great teams in this league, and everybody's going to point to Seattle. They're a great defense. They're not a great team. If the great teams in this league, eventually it gets to that pocket. We'll watch Rodgers tonight, okay? Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. You're going to watch him tonight. You're going to watch Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan plays behind a terrible offensive line. But he knows how to make subtle little slides and moves in the pocket and still have the ability to make plays. Now, this guy doesn't have Julio Jones. He doesn't have Roddy White, so that's a big difference. But he's got to get to that spot where he can put his foot in the ground, and if there's immediate pressure where he doesn't get out, he slides, moves, and goes and makes a play in the pocket. Or the way Rodgers does it, when he moves just a little bit one way or the other or gets outside the pocket, keeps the head up, and makes a throw. That's where this kid has to get to. That's how you win this league long term.
Mac on the north side about quarterbacks. What's up, Mac?
Hey, JP, I want to ask Pete three quick questions.
Oh, three?
Yeah, three quick questions. Pete is a quarterback expert. Here we go, Pete. Is Bortles better than Gabbert? Yes or no?
Oh, yes. Way much better.
Okay. Is Bortles better than David Garrard?
He will be.
Oh, will be?
Yeah.
Okay. I take that. Will he be better than Mark Brunell?
I think he will be.
Okay, and I'm going to take your word on that. Peace out.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Well,
yeah, and that's not a slight against Mark Brunell. I just think this kid has the prototypical stuff. The big, the good arm. He just needs to work on his mechanics. And I think he was on with somebody in here one day, and he said his mechanics, because he's so into the book each week and the game plan, he hasn't had the work on his mechanics as much. And I think his mechanics have been worse in the last 6 weeks than they were in the first 4 weeks he played. So I think that's something he's going to have to work through. But as far as the game itself and where he should be playing, I always go back to it because its sustainable success in the National Football League is predicated on playing in the pocket. The best teams in the league are who?
Patriots.
Tom Brady. In the pocket.
Packers.
Aaron Rodgers. In the pocket.
Denver Broncos.
Peyton Manning in the pocket. And then Seattle's in that conversation, but they're the aberration because their defense is so, so dominant. Now, if this team builds a defense like that, which I think they have the capability to do, by the mm-hmm. way, then it's a different animal. Then you'd have the great defense and a guy who could make plays because I think he's going to be good. I still do. Then you're going to have best of both worlds.
Doesn't happen all the time.
That
rarely
never
happens.
Ever happens. And that's why it would be – this defense has pieces of it that give you an idea that it can be really good down the road. Colvin, McCray. If you take those two corners in a league where everybody's trying to emulate Seattle, mm-hmm. well, there they are. Long, linear, turn, run, cover. Grotz can play as the third corner. You have three corners. Then you'll be okay there. Cyprian needs to play better, but I think he's a box safety. I think he could fill the Cam Chancellor role in their defense in a fantastic way
if they had a rangy Earl Thomas type free safety. And that's why I said last week, go get Devin McCourty. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, your secondary is fixed. It's good. It has a chance to be really good. Telvin Smith, I think, fits. He can run and chase. He's in the Seattle model. You know, it's the most underrated thing in the Seattle defense. And I'm studying him this week. A coordinator told me this the other day. He said, in other defenses, you throw a pass, you're going to get 9 yards. It's a 4-yard gain in Seattle's defense because those linebackers run and tackle so much. Well, Telvin Smith can do that. He's going to get bigger, stronger. He's going to be fast. Maybe they go get a guy like KJ Wright off Seattle's team because he's an unrestricted free agent. Bring him in there. You know, the Puzzlesy thing will be an interesting dilemma for him.
Yeah. They've got money to spend, though.
I'd want to be faster there, but they might prefer to have that his smarts and his athletic and his ability to decipher things in there. But then you go to the front. Miller will be back. Senderic Marks, you go to the Pro Bowl. He's a heck of a player.
Yep.
You know, Reds rotation around. Guys, the body guys, the you know, Ryan Davis, keep him, you know, those kind of guys. Jones, you know, Clemens will be around for another year at least. But then that's where you start to address the next generation of pass rusher, the next generation of speed linebacker. And so they go into this draft.
That starts this year.
Right now. Randy Gregory from Nebraska. Maybe the pass rusher from, and I haven't studied these guys in depth yet, but maybe the pass rusher from Missouri. There's pass rushers available. Then you get a speed linebacker, a run and chase, put him on the ground guy. You get those three or four things on defense. All of a sudden, your defense is significantly better. You spend money to maybe bring a veteran player in. And on offense, you get spend money on a few players because they have money to spend. Maybe get a big play receiver. Maybe get a tight end. Maybe go get Julius Thomas if he's available. Maybe get somebody. And then you let them all grow together next year on offense. You win 7, 8, 9 games next year. And then in 2016, people go into the season. They say, you know what? That Jacksonville team is going to push for a Super Bowl. That's the model right there.
GM Pete Prisco.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't think I'm far off from their plan either. I really don't. I think that is their plan. And you know, and that's the way the plan should be. So when all the fans get all riled up every Sunday because it's not going the way it's supposed to go, just remember, it's not about now. Yeah, you want it to be better, but you got to let it grow. You got to let it grow. And I know it's frustrating at times for the fans out there,
yeah.
And you want to see a competitive game. That's why I think if they go to Baltimore this week and get just waylaid, then I think you got a big problem.
One more phone call before we move along. Greg on the west side wants to talk about empty seats. What's up, Greg?
Hey, Pete. How you guys doing? JP.
Great, man.
What's up?
Man, Pete, I used to listen to your show all the time when you had one, man. I miss you, man.
Back when he had one.
Back when I had one, yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, man. I mean open wounds.
No, it's not a wound. I got a good job. Jobs.
I saw this article on TNN. They actually have it on their front page where they – apparently, somebody took a shot of the stadium at halftime, and there was literally maybe 10% of the crowd still in their seats. And there was a big article about the fact that, you know, the article was talking about the fact that Jags aren't supporting their team and that we were even leading at halftime and the people left anyway. I'm just curious. It's like, does this impact the team at all? I mean, do they see this stuff? And, I mean, does it, affect them at all? The fact that, okay, you know, the fans maybe start losing the fan support.
The actual football team, I don't know if it bothers those guys.
And you know what, somebody in my office wrote something on the stadium and the fans, and I got some tweets from people yesterday. And they were mad about the guy. It was one of the boss put up a little sign saying, "Look, this is where your thing, where your yeah."
It's Mark Long put out a photo from the Associated Press yesterday during the game. Well, it was after halftime. It was pouring down rain.
And how soon after halftime? Because I can take that exact same picture in Pittsburgh where the great diehard fans are.
That's right.
And half the stadium's empty after halftime.
So, so does it affect the team?
No.
The players? No. Does it affect the front office and some marketing? Maybe. Yeah,
But it's not that they left or they're not there. They probably
underneath, and right. That's the whole point.
And that's what happens in Pittsburgh. I watch every all-22 game every week. Okay, and when they go to the scoreboard in stadiums, there's a lot of empty seats everywhere. They're everywhere, and so don't. My bosses wrote something like that, and I got some tweets, and I talked to my boss about it. I said, look, that's what happened in that game. But that's not an indictment of the fan base in Jacksonville. Sorry. Hate to tell you that. It's not.
61,070 seats for, distributed.
For a game that meant nothing against a you know, decent team, not a marquee great team. So, look, I say it all the time. The Jacksonville Jaguar fan base is a good fan base, a really good fan base. And the young people in this city who couldn't go to school in 1999 because their team was a game away from the Super Bowl and they didn't make it, that kid is now old enough to buy tickets.
That's right.
And so it's younger, it's a more passionate, it's a and, you know, like the, all these the travel, the, what's that group that travels with the team?
Gold City Brigade.
They're young. Yeah. They're into it. They love it. I mean, I get feedback from those guys all the time. That's the kind of fan you want. That's the kind of fan that you want to have 25 years from now. I used to say it on my show. The wine and cheese crowd that used to come to be seen at the games, they've been replaced by the diehards. And that's what this town is. This city supports that football team just as much as any other city, any other team, except for the legacy teams. And the legacy teams, but you know what? The Steelers are a legacy team. And when you put on after halftime, put on their game, there isn't anybody in the stands either.
Generation Jaguar is what they've been calling that, by the way. The young kids that have come up and are now buying tickets.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. The kid who couldn't go to school.
Mark Long, of all people.
Well, I mean, it's a legitimate picture.
Yes,
but
what, it is.
What's the time on it, though? Is it a minute after the halftime?
It's 2:46 real time. So it's the start of the second half. Teams are running out for the first play from scrimmage,
That happens in every stadium. I could take him. I'm telling you, I've been at Pittsburgh in playoff games, and you look out there after halftime. Now, the joke is that all the people in Pittsburgh are up on the concourse is smoking. But
well, there you go.
But they're not in their seats. They're not in their seats.
They're somewhere in the stadium, and that's the word from here, is that they're underneath the concourse. It's pouring down rain. I mean, I don't know. So, yeah, that's been a topic throughout the day, I know, on Twitter. We'll come back in a moment. We'll look around the National Football League. Pete, I know you watched all the games yesterday. We'll get some highlights from yesterday's action.
I'm excited about tonight's game. You got a 5-7 team that might go into first place with a victory.
Battle of first place
teams.
And if they
lose and they go to 5-8, they're still in first place.
Helmets and Heels Radio tomorrow night. Jessica, Lauren, Donna, and Blythe will talk the Jags and the league from their unique and strictly feminine perspective. Tuesdays at 7 on 1010XL 92.5 FM. A look around the National Football League when we return. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio. A ticket to a Jags game is more than just a seat. It's a chance to watch the game live from the all-inclusive Clevelander Deck Spa Cabanas at Everbank Field. Bring a group of your friends to enjoy a unique, one-of-a-kind area, relaxing lounge furniture, all-inclusive food and beverage, premium parking, an amazing view. Spa Cabana is still available for the last home game of the season when the Jags face the Titans. Call 633-2000 right now. A ticket to a Jags game is more than just a seat, but not according to Mark Long.
Go any other stadium, it's the same. By the way, I got a lot of tweets from the Bold City Brigade, which a lot of those guys have come at me back in the past for.
No.
They think I'm a hater, you know? So it's weird. It's weird.
Haters
seeing,
gonna hate.
No, I'm not a hater. I'm a realist. But it's nice seeing. It's nice seeing comments. It's nice seeing comments that are thanking me, because that gets tiring to me all over the country. By the way, when I'll go to the Super Bowl in a month and a half, and people come up to me and say, "Oh, that team's going to London, or this team's going there. They're getting out of there," and I say, "You have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. None. You want to look at a team in Florida that might move and should move or could move? Go across the state. You want to talk about a fan base that doesn't go? There's the one." Clearly, much worse of a fan base than what they have here. And the stadium, this experience has got significantly better, but for years that one was better, and they still didn't go. So don't put that on this fan base, because this fan base is here, and it's just dying and thirsting for a winner.
Win some games.
Yeah, and once they start winning, they'll come.
And they're coming now.
But they'll really come. You won't be able to buy a ticket outside for $5 like you could do now. In a year from now, that ticket, you won't be able to get it for $5. 2 years from now, good luck with that.
I like your prediction. I like this. I like the way this is
going. You know, I play general manager in my mind all the time.
Team president, too. So
I will say this, though. If they're ever going to get to a Super Bowl in 2 years, you can't go for two in the third quarter.
Here we go.
And you know what?
Here we go.
And I'll say this. Chuck Pagano followed suit yesterday. Did the exact same thing.
That's right. Yes, it was the same score, too.
21-15.
It was, yes.
He went
ended
for two.
Ended up 25-24.
He went for two.
About that.
You can't go for two. You have to spin it forward.
Let's go around the National Football League. You brought up the Colts. Nice come from behind win. What a drive by Andrew Luck to get it done in Cleveland. About that.
Well, it's Johnny Manziel time, first off. Let's call
finally.
It should be. It looks like it's going to be, and it should be. Look, Brian Hoyer isn't very good. And I throw this phrase out there all the time about quarterbacks. You are what you are. He isn't what he is. And he's not very good. He's a journeyman. It's so funny. About a month and a half ago, before the Jaguar game against here, they were talking about there was people talking about franchising him. Remember?
Yes, I do. Because
we laughed that right out of this studio. Remember?
That's right.
And it's comical now, but it's time for Johnny Manziel. It's Johnny Football time.
Has there been a franchise with more quarterback misery? Maybe the Dolphins in recent memory than the Browns. Browns, Dolphins have had so much turnover.
Yeah, but at least the Dolphins had Marino.
After Marino.
And then they had Kozar. So, yeah, theirs goes back longer. It's bad. It's bad. It's bad, Cleveland.
Browns, yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? You draft Johnny Manziel in the first round, he's supposed to be the guy. If you thought enough of him to draft him in the first round, he's your quarterback. Play him now. You're not going to the playoffs. And even if you went to the playoffs, it'd be fool's gold. You're just delaying the inevitable.
Pittsburgh Steelers blew out the Bengals 42-21. The AFC North is about as tight as it can get right now, man.
By the way, you got me thinking about this.
Uh-oh.
With the Jacksonville Jaguar fans who are all over Blake Bortles, rather he be sitting and they be two more wins than what they have now, or would they rather he be playing for next year?
Remember, that was the talk.
Right.
And he was supposed to start.
The best
right?
thing that happened to him was playing him. Playing him, playing him, playing him.
Okay.
Okay, now what was your question?
Steelers.
I'm just off on tangents
today.
It's
okay. No, we'll just go whatever direction you
Steelers.
Want.
Steelers.
We'll come back to that
I'll tell you
shortly.
What.
Steelers.
Steelers saved their season yesterday.
Yes, they did.
I mean, they were dead and done. If they lose that game, they're finished.
They're 8-5 now.
Yes, and they have the Bengals in their place in a couple weeks. The schedule's favorable. They play at Atlanta next week. That's not going to be an easy game, particularly when you're the Steelers because they're so inconsistent. Think about the Steelers. They lost to the Bucs at home, to the Saints at home, and on the road to the Jets.
That's
wildly inconsistent. Then you go on the road and beat them over 500 yards against a Bengals defense that had been playing really good football in three straight road games.
Remember earlier in the year there were some rumblings about Tomlin's job security?
Yeah, I don't think. The Steelers
they don't change coaches.
They don't change coaches. Just like, you know, I keep hearing about Trestman's job.
Yeah.
And probably, if you look at it on the surface, you probably should get rid of Mark Trestman. But the Bears don't change coaches that often either. I mean, they did with Lovie Smith, but
he was
that
there
been
for
there
a little
for a while.
Yeah.
Quickly like that, I doubt they would make a change.
The Rams have back-to-back shutouts for the first time in their franchise's history, since 1945, that is, in their franchise's history. The Cleveland Rams shut out the Chicago Cardinals 21-0, and then the Chicago Bears 17-0 in the 1945 season.
Yeah, I was at those games.
Were you?
No.
But they hammered Washington.
The Rams are the team nobody wants to play now. I mean, don't they do it every year, though? Is that not the Rams? Okay, they lost their quarterback, so you got to give them a little bit of a pass.
Yeah.
But don't they always seem to make some push during the end
There's
of the season?
There's something to them.
And
yeah.
And right now they play the Cardinals Thursday night, then they play the Seahawks the final week of the season. They're going to go a long way in deciding who wins that division. And their defense is tough and nasty. And Robert Quinn, who didn't have a sack for the first seven games, I think it was, now has 10.5. He has 4.5 in the last 2 weeks.
The Panthers and the Saints got in a huge brawl in the Dome after Cam Newton touched down. He kind of taunted one of the other players, and there was a huge brawl in the end zone. Were they right to go after Cam?
Yeah, you can go get in his face, but you don't need to go punching people, and there was an ejection in that game. To me, that game is mystifying, just absolutely mystifying. The New Orleans Saints must stink.
41-10.
Well, it was awful. It's the fourth straight loss. In the Dome.
You didn't go in the Dome 3 years ago and win.
That was a safe haven. That was a safe haven for him. And I think it's the last time they lost three straight games or four straight games is 1999.
Holy cow.
That means under Peyton and Breeze and that group, they haven't lost. And now they're – I mean, look,
if the Falcons lose tonight, they're still tied for the lead, and they play him in 2 weeks. Carolina's now alive in the division. What about yesterday? Tampa Bay was eliminated from playoff competition, but now they're tied for the number one pick in the league.
That's unbelievable.
Is that not crazy? It's crazy, crazy, crazy year. But the Steelers, to me, the Saints beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh two weeks ago. How does that happen? Now the Saints have to go to Chicago and play the Bears. That's not next week, Monday night. That's not going to be an easy game either, even though the Bears stink.
Teddy Bridgewater to Jarius Wright, 87-yard touchdown in overtime. Vikings over the Jets. Rex done, right? He's got to be done.
He's done. I know Rex will end up with another job somewhere. I don't know if it'll be this year or if he'll go into TV for a year or so. But he's done in New York. It has to be. And I think Idzik's going to be done too. I think they got to blow that up. Get it all started all over again.
You were a Teddy Bridgewater guy or no?
No. I mean, I liked him. I didn't like him like many people did. But, look, he made a nice play on that play. Checked to it. Made a quick throw. Broke a tackle. And then they had a defensive lineman trying to chase down Wright, and that wasn't happening.
That did not happen.
No, didn't happen.
No. The Ravens blast the Dolphins 28-13, and that's a primed and ready football team next week.
It was weird because the first half of that game, Miami's winning 10-0. They look to be total control of the game. Baltimore gets a touchdown late to make it 10-7. They come out in the second half. They got a 4th-and-1 at their own 38, down 10-7, and he went for it. I mean, I don't like that call at all, but he got away with it.
That's right.
He got away with it. They got a first down, went down and scored a touchdown, and went ahead, and then they just unleashed their pass rushers. When you have Doomerville and you have Suggs, you know, people keep talking about Nada suspended for the next 4 games or whatever. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of bodies in the middle, and they have pass rushers on the end. Mosley, the rookie from Alabama, is playing. You know, it's between him and Donald for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Darryl Smith's solid. He's not great, but he's solid. He's not fast, but he's a good, solid player. And they have a lot of bodies they throw at you. The secondary, weak link. They're beatable in the secondary.
How quickly everyone forgets about Ray Rice in Baltimore, too.
Out of sight, out of mind.
That's right.
Justin Forsett. Here's another ex-Jaguar, by the way.
There you go. just next guy up.
Yeah, and their offensive line. Eugene Monroe, another ex-Jaguar.
That's right.
Their offensive line is good. Not great, but it's good. The guards are good. The Yanda and Osemele are good guards. They got a nice, Zuda they picked up. And then the right tackle has been one of the better bargains in the league. A late-round pick or fourth-round pick last year, playing really good football at right tackle, Ricky Wagner.
Anderson, 3 touchdowns on the ground. Broncos over the Bills. They found a new weapon, maybe.
And they've morphed
Denver into
a running team.
How about that?
That's not going to last. It can't last.
Better not
but
last.
But what it will do is when they get to the postseason and they get a lead, now they can run the ball. You know, in the years past, it wasn't always that way. You get a lead and you keep throwing and you make a mistake and then you let a team back in the game. Now they can run the ball. By the way, they're undefeated in games where Peyton Manning's thrown for under 300 yards.
Undefeated?
Undefeated. I think they're 7-0 in games where he's thrown for under 300 yards.
There's a lot of touchdowns in there, though.
Yeah.
Right.
But they're not, you know, they're not being forced to throw it all over the place. That doesn't mean they can't. Now there's questions out there. I saw today where Fox was asked about the pass rush and passing game and how it's struggling. Come on. If they have to, they have to. Plus, Julius Thomas hadn't been around, so they'll get it going.
The Seahawks are on a roll, 24-14 over the Eagles in Philly. They go all the way to Philadelphia and get that win. And I read your musings today, and you actually gave Russell Wilson some credit.
Yeah, and he missed some throws, and he had a couple dropped interceptions. One of them was an awful play. But he made some plays, and he made some throws. They weren't hard throws because the guys were open, wide open. So I'll give it that. But he made the plays. He escaped some pressure. He got hit. You know, he ran for a touchdown, which I don't, you know, they keep.
What is he supposed to do? Like fall down and throw on third, like another down?
It was a run play. I mean,
supposed to take a knee? Yeah, run if it's there.
No, of course, but you don't design plays for your quarterback to run like that. I'm just concerned about that. You realize coming into this week, I don't think it's that way anymore. He was averaging more per rush than he was yards per attempt throwing it.
That's incredible, actually.
Yeah, it is.
Think about that.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. That shouldn't happen. You shouldn't. You're not winning long-term with that kind of offensive makeup. You're not. But he played good yesterday. The defense was fantastic. The defense, it's getting back to what it was. Wagner is back. Chancellor's healthy. Byron Maxwell, one of the unsung players on that defense, the corner. And now they're playing, when they go to pass rush situations, Bennett and Cliff Avery are both on the same side. So they're getting right. They have a big game. They have a big game this week with the 49ers. You know, the 49ers, they're dead and buried if they lose that game.
They're dead and buried if they lose a game.
They're dead and buried anyway.
No,
aren't they?
They went out. They're going to get in. They got to win out.
They lost to Oakland, Pete.
I agree. But they go to Seattle this week, and you know how that rivalry gets it going. And it'll be a violent, nasty game. And this is they're playing for their lives. And we've seen teams play for their lives and play well. I mean that's Baltimore was playing for its life yesterday. I mean Miami probably was too. But Baltimore has guys who have been there and done it. And San Francisco's had guys who have been there and done it.
Watch out! There'll be a bidding war for Harbaugh before we know it.
Yeah, since he's gone in the opposite direction in the last 3 years. He went from Super Bowl to title game to maybe not make the playoffs. Boy, he's a guy I'm going to trade draft picks for. Plus, he's like a rotten milk. He's got a shell, you know, it goes rotten. His shelf life expires, and then it goes bad. That's what Harbaugh is to me.
Other than that, not a strong opinion about Harbaugh. New system, new routes, new way. The JTA has transformed to be the kind of bus system customers enjoy riding. Their new routes mark the beginning of a new way of doing business at the JTA. For more information, visit jtafla.com or call 904-630-3100. We'll look at Monday Night Football and a little bit about next week. The Jags in Baltimore after this. We'll wrap up Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Final moments of Jaguars Monday. JP Shadrick with CBSSports.com senior NFL columnist Pete Prisco. Another reminder about the Thursday night Jaguars home game in a couple of weeks. The biggest, boldest tailgate event of the year, Pete.
Biggest, boldest.
Biggest and boldest. Jags-Titans on the 18th. A live performance by J.J. Gray and Mo Fro, a craft beer fest before the game. Local cuisine from the best food trucks in Jacksonville. Tickets available 633-2000. Game ticket gets you in.
You know, food trucks have come a long way from the hot dog cart on the side of the road, haven't they?
They sure have. They absolutely have.
Yeah.
I just had a thing against food trucks for a long time, but I've turned the tide.
Don't they come out here every Friday?
Most Fridays, yeah. Yes. For staff and
has the grilled trees, grilled cheese truck been out here?
Has it? Yes, it has.
Thumbs up, huh?
Joe's a fan, yeah. I like the one that has the Italian beef sandwich, the Chicago.
I love Chicago Italian beef sandwich.
I tell you what, I got off the grilled cheese truck. Grilled cheese and Granny Smith apples in the sandwich. Sliced thin. It was good.
Was it good? I saw on their menu they have like grilled cheese, macaroni and cheese or something. I'm like, what the heck is that?
Yeah. Who thinks of this
but
stuff?
But there's one that has Chicago. Which one has the Chicago beef?
Oh, gosh. I forget the name of it now. It comes out here every other week or so. And I get it every single time.
I bet that's fantastic. I love Chicago beef sandwich. That's good. That's good.
That's real good.
It's not good for you, but it's good.
I don't care.
I don't know.
Who cares at this point?
In Chicago. You got to say it like that. Give me the Chicago beef sandwich.
From Monday Night Football tonight.
I'm looking forward to tonight, JP.
How about this one? A battle of division leaders. The Atlanta Falcons at a red-hot 5-7 and the 9-3 Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field.
You know, I love
Brett Favre's in Green Bay.
I've known Mike Smith for a long time. I have great respect for him. If it wasn't for two bad coaching decisions, he'd be 7-5.
See, we've talked about these.
Yeah. He botched a couple end of game situations, and he'd probably be the first one to admit it. If he had to do it all over again, he wouldn't do it the way he did it. But I think Mike, if people wanted to fire Mike, I wouldn't be surprised if they go in there and play him tough tonight. Offensive shootout. Lots of points.
Isn't this the Bart Starr game? Aren't they doing something with Bart Starr
today? And Favre came up and was part of their thing. Yeah,
but he's in bad health,
and it's a little snowy, from what I understand.
Yeah, not quite the frozen tundra like it used to be.
No, but it's snowy, and snow without wind means points.
Really?
Yeah, because offensive players know where they're going, defensive players don't know where they're going.
Well, it's not going to accumulate. They got a heated field.
Pass rushers can't get traction. Be a little,
it's like 70-degree
so
field.
There'll be some snow on that field. There'll be snow on that field.
Really?
I want to see a lot of points tonight. I want to see passing games cranked up.
You love a good 60-50.
No, that's the college game. Give me a good 35-31. Each quarterback throws for 350 and three scores, and I'm happy. I don't need Baylor and TCU playing 61-58.
That's not fun. That's video game football.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
That's not right.
I don't know what that is.
Though when I played video games, I loved a good defensive struggle with a run
game. You
know
what? Alabama, for all their supposed defensive, they play a lot of high-scoring games, too.
Well, they've had to, yeah, recently.
Best team in football, by the way.
Who's that?
Alabama.
Thank you.
I mean, you're winning it, though.
Well, that's okay.
But they're the best team. Wonder why.
The
Nick Saban.
That's right.
Great coach.
Best coach in football. The Jaguars are in Baltimore this week before
bad,
we get out of here.
Bad stop.
You don't like this matchup.
No, I don't. Bad situation because you're going against a team in the thick of the playoff race with two good lines. They might have the best line combination. Before Nada went out, they had the best line combination in football, and they have good pass rushers. And the Jaguars have had big-time problems with pass rushers coming at their quarterback. Not a good situation.
It is the day after the Army-Navy game in Baltimore on Saturday.
You going?
No.
You going?
No. No, I think the team arrives right around kickoff or something. They're actually staying down in D.C. They're not even staying in Baltimore because there's no hotel rooms.
Really?
Yeah, they have to stay down in Maryland, yeah.
Have to call the guy who books the hotel rooms. You should have beat the Army-Navy game there.
That's all right. Hey.
That's one of the – you know, Baltimore's –
I think they like it this
way. Baltimore's a great city to go to because you can stay – when I used to cover the Jaguars, you used to stay right downtown and walk to the stadium. When I used to do games there for CBS, I'd go walk to the stadium. And you can go to Vaccaro's. You know Vaccaro's?
Vaccaro's.
Huh? Vaccaro's? You know what Vaccaro's
no,
is?
I
it's
don't.
In the Little Italy neighborhood in Baltimore. They sell cannoli dip.
Never
you,
heard of
you,
it.
You know what cannolis are? You
yes,
know what cannolis.
Absolutely.
They sell dip, the actual cream, and they make the chips are made out of the shell. It's
wow.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
How about that?
Beats salsa.
Yeah, I guess so. Let's go check in with the guys at Timeout. Fat Tony and Paul Spicer know about have you all heard of this cannoli dip, guys?
No. I had not until yeah. You just talked about it, but as a half Italian, I am very intrigued. By the concept of cannoli.
You know what? I grew up eating, you know, when we were kids, that was like this big-time dessert. You know, you had cannolis. And
sure.
So we were in Baltimore. One of the guys up there said, you got to go over there and try this. And I looked and I go, oh, my God, it's what a great idea. It's like they sell it like a platter with the chips around the outside of the dip in the middle.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds
it's fantastic.
Now I got to do 2 hours of radio. I can't go just grab a dessert.
No.
Pete.
You got to do 2 hours of treadmill.
I appreciate it.
That's what it is. And you know what, Paul? Once you start, you're not stopping that. That's the problem with that. You know, if you have like one cannoli shell, you eat that, it's gone. When you have the dip, you just keep dipping like your last meal. It's unbelievable.
Pete, I wanted to ask you with the I heard you guys here at the end talking about the game coming up against Baltimore, and how important is a game like this Sunday for this Jaguars team? I know. Look, there's been a lot of excuse making. It feels like from the Jaguars' perspective for how young this team is, and I agree with you. I think it's time to take the training wheels off. These guys are 14 games in now to their rookie seasons. They're not rookies anymore, and it's time to stop using that as kind of a blanket for them when they come out of games like they played in the second half yesterday against Houston. But how important is Sunday in Baltimore, a team that is not maybe on the edge of playoff competition, but right in the thick of it for their division, for the AFC wild card, on the road, for them to be competitive when it comes to the second half of this game and not let it be one of these 37-10 games that we've seen here in the last 2 years for this franchise?
I think it's important. And I said it earlier. I think if they go up there and it's 27-20, you know, 20-14, you know, whatever it is, that's a good sign. But if it's 37-7 and they come back and, you know, it's the same old, you know, they're young. And they're young players and they're young as units, so that factors in as well. But I think on Monday, I just get a sense you might see a different Gus, and he might actually come out and say, you know what, enough is enough. These kids are young, yes, but it's time to take the training wheels off and quit making the youth excuse for them.
Absolutely. I like that, Pete. And just, you know, you mentioned it earlier with those pass rushers up there. I mean, Suggs and Dumerville, they get after you. And right now, you know, with Jokel, and we don't know who's going to play the right side. If it's going to be Young and whoever else they find. Maybe they might go back and Bradfield, which if that happens, it's going to be Young.
It'll be Sam Young again.
Yeah, he actually did a pretty good job the other day. But you're right, though, Paul. It's pass rushers. The league is pass rushers. Quarterbacks and pass rushers. And Dumerville leads the league in sacks. He's tied with Houston with 16. And the other guy, you know, Suggs is going to get after you. So if you get behind, that's a problem.
That'll do it for Jaguars Monday. Timeout with Fat Tony and Paul Spicer starts right now.